This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Jason Isaacs, sometime AKA Captain or even Emperor Lorca. You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am your co-host, Liam Smart, and joining me today is Brandy Jackler and Nick Collinson, as they always do. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well.
Still sick.
Social distance hug for Brandy.
Oh, thank you. I can almost feel it. I can see it, but I can almost feel it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Makes me happy.
Anything new from since the last week that we recorded? Obviously, you're still sick, Brandy. Anything new from you, Nick?
I've gotten a fair bit further with my PhD thesis, which, as of recording this, is due for submission in, about 3.5 months?
So, not long.
That is really getting down to the wire, but I'm pretty confident about it. And
how many pages does your thesis have to be?
There's no set limit. It just has to be enough that I get all of the information across and you know, succinctly. At the moment, the introduction is currently, nearly 20 pages.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Can that be considered an introduction?
That's chapter one.
Okay.
And then the next three chapters are the paper I published and the two papers that are ready for publication. And then there's a general discussion as well. Each one of those is going to be anywhere between 10 and 20 pages.
I was going to say, can I read it? But I'm not reading that many pages. It's taken me 6 months to read the Saru book.
I will say that the paper that I published was in an open access journal, so anyone who wants to could go on and read it if you wanted to, if you're interested in aphids and fungal endophytes. But
we have a big problem with aphids here, so I would probably actually find that interesting.
Yeah, they're pretty hard to get rid of, especially because they basically breed like tribbles. They just, as long as they eat, they don't even need to mate. They just keep popping out nymphs.
You did say on a postcard thread for Trouble with Tribbles there are some bugs that are pregnant already.
Parthenogenetic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, there we go. Brings it right back to
Art mirroring life.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So, today, listeners, we thought we would talk about some of the background bridge crew. This idea stemmed from me absolutely screwing up the names of Lieutenant Reese.
Yes.
And Bryce. Throughout last week's or last episode recording, that if you listened all the way to the end past the closing stuff, you'd have heard us absolutely destroy it. So we thought we'd try and do an episode this week completely about them. So we're going to have to see how many times I say Rice and Brees instead of Reese and Bryce.
That's now how they are in my headcanon. You ruined it forever for me.
I'm good at ruining
things. Just kidding,
things.
You didn't ruin it. No, you didn't ruin it. It's just when I make an association like that, it's really hard to break it. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So before we start going through a few of them, Brandy, what were your initial thoughts, or what are your initial thoughts, sorry, of the background bridge crew?
Well, I like that we finally got to know some of them better in season 2. And poor Bryce, I don't think he even got a name until season two.
He didn't.
So I'm glad that they started exploring the rest of the crew a little bit more. And I feel like they're going to do that even more with season three.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Because it looks like not everybody is together. So it's probably going to focus on different groups of people all working towards the same sort of goal, is my guess. I'm excited. I wish they'd give us a release date already. Come on! But I enjoy the rest of the Bridge crew because everybody's got a thing. Everybody has a job to do, but they also are starting to show their personalities, and that always makes me happy.
I think, and especially in season one, they were very much, you know, aside from a couple of them, they're just kind of there in the background, and it's good that we're just very, you know, we're slowly starting to get to know little bits about them, which I'm sure we can kind of go into in more detail when we start talking about them individually.
I appreciated on the surface, and this is not intended to sound bad or any way, but I'd appreciated the diversity in looks of the characters, if that makes sense. We've got Awushakun and
We've got Awushakun and
Bryce.
I can't do it. Yeah. This is going to be terrible.
Awushakun and Bryce, obviously being of African American descent, and then you've got Reese of Asian descent. No. Yeah, Reese. Oh, no. Yes. Yes. I can't. We might have to not do this recording.
Yeah.
Too late. We've already started.
I'm going to have to change the outline because I put the joke on the outline and I'm reading the outline.
Stop reading the outline or fix it, you poor dear.
I mean, Reese is presumably, I always at least think of it in, I guess, the Welsh spelling, which is like R-H-E-E or something like that.
It's R-H-Y-S for Jen Reese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's just, it's almost exactly the same spelling as Bryce.
I know, and that's why I keep thinking about it. So, but yeah, anyway, we got a lot of diversity in terms of the look of the crew. Obviously, we took a long time to find out anything about them. So, in terms of personality, I guess we don't really know that much about them at all.
Well, we had slightly more about Detmer in season one because she had been on the Shenzo.
Yeah, true. And we got a fair amount of Awushakun and New Eden.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so talking of Awushakun, shall we start off with Joanne?
Yes.
Let us
go. Brandy, what did you think of Joanne Awushakun?
I love that we got to have more history on her, and to have her come from a Luddite background is just the best. To have someone who is raised, you know, with technology is bad sort of idea, and then to just completely go in the opposite direction and go into a profession that requires knowledge of the most advanced technology. It's just, I love that. I love that. She did what she wanted to do. She followed her heart, and I can appreciate that very much. It takes a lot of bravery to go completely against the way that you have been raised. And I imagine that her family was not happy about it. I don't feel like they ever, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't think they ever did the whole "you're dead to me" thing. So I think it was more as just they didn't understand. And I'm getting all of this from the letter she was dictating to her family before they were going to go through the wormhole into the future.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. But she loves what she does. And this is what she wanted to do, and she's doing it, and more power to her.
Well, she said that she felt like she scared her parents of what she was wanting to do and that they would forgive her. But in that case, maybe there was a lot of bad blood, potentially, with her parents and her going off into Starfleet.
Yeah, I'm sure that there was not any kind of agreement or support going on in the beginning.
Mm.
And perhaps her family thought, you know, she'll come back home with her tail between her legs and she'll have learned her lesson. But that's not what she was meant for. She was meant to be on that starship. That was her dream, and she did it.
So she grew up in a Luddite collective, though. where they shunned technology.
Exactly.
Would they learn science? Because she'd have had like a massive learning curve to go through.
Well, I'm pretty sure that you can't completely eschew technology in that time period. I mean, even now, people who live off the grid still have some forms of technology.
Yeah.
Like, they have generators to create power in their cabin in the middle of the woods. So, but, you know, there is still some level of technology. So, I guess it just depends on what exactly the definition of Luddite is in the 23rd century, 22nd century. So,
because it says they lived with limited technology. And that's all we get about them.
Yeah.
And she knows how to use, like, knives and things to pick locks.
or a magnet.
Oh, that's right.
And
magnets.
And a wire.
Yeah.
Totally misremembered that episode, didn't I?
No, she used a magnet and a wire to unlatch that lock.
Yeah. MacGyver style.
Yep, she MacGyvered that up really good.
I mean, of all the background bridge characters, I feel like she's got the most development in terms of what we know about her past.
Yes.
Yeah, just pretty much just based on that episode.
Yeah, well, we know what Discovery is like for having one episode of minor information about people, Arium. But even for a Wishakan, her name was only mentioned as credits in context as the Kings, apparently. So she didn't really, we probably didn't even really hear her name for a fair amount of Discovery.
Yeah.
Until episode one of season two, during roll call.
Yeah, when Pike actually does the roll call. And I feel like that, having that scene was kind of specifically for us, the viewers, so that we're just like, okay, this is what these people are named.
Well, honestly, because I didn't know half of the crew. I'm like, oh, he's an attractive guy in the background, but no idea what his name is.
Yeah, but that was the thing. Pike was our avatar for that because he didn't know any of the crew either. So it was for both him, but also us.
I will say that was a fundamental failing of season one. We just did not know who was on the bridge, and you could see them doing stuff, and it's like, well, who are you?
I don't know at what point in it they could have fit in a bit more development for them because there was still a lot.
There was time to put their name in, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, you don't need 5 minutes to give someone's name. It's like, oh, okay, there we go. Your name is first name, last name.
Yeah.
Sorry to be very, like, pouncy on that one.
No, that's okay. Well, how many of the people who sat in the navigation chair on the bridge of the Enterprise D can you name?
Yeah.
but those characters that spin around, like jump in and out.
Yeah, but they are there a lot. There are some that you see like 10 times in a season.
Well, I can't.
And we never hear a name.
I can't talk because TNG is like my second least favorite season, but for Voyager, I can name a fair few.
Well.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's not unheard of.
Okay.
In Trek.
Yeah. No, I've been kind of thinking about that too. It's just like how long after the very start of Next Gen was it until who everyone was properly solidified? Like, I feel like we probably learned all of their names in like the first episode or two, obviously.
Yeah, but we also had like 24 or 26 episodes a season. So there was a lot more time to explore all of those things.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, when you go back and watch it, you're like, oh, good Lord, there's still 13 episodes of this season to get through.
Yeah, that's so weird that our perception of that has just changed, you know, I've been trying to go through and rewatch Next Gen. Especially when you get up to like the low 20s. And my mindset from certain other shows was that they would get to like 22 and that would be the finale back then. But now these ones go up to like 26 episodes. It's just like, there's still so many left. What else is there to do?
Yeah, and that was the nature of American television. And in some cases, that is still very much what the major networks do. But I feel that that's actually the thing that's less common now.
Yeah.
And what's more common now is having a season that's like anywhere from 6 to 13 episodes. depending on what the series is and whether it's a half hour show or an hour show, etc. Because honestly, it's just too much. There's so much out there that it's better to do these shorter seasons and, you know, just cut out the fat. Yeah. Just get to the story.
Yeah.
And get it done.
Yeah, and everything is going more towards the streaming model with, like, kind of binging in mind too. So, yeah.
Well, and that's why I like CBS All Access still doing the weekly episode thing with Trek. Because, yeah, when it's all out, then you can binge it should you choose to. But I like the anticipation. Plus, I don't get overloaded.
Yeah.
Oh, no. How am I going to talk about all of this now? That's just my personal preference. We got way off track. I am the queen of tangent.
Yep. Good tangent. But yeah, I agree with you. I like that too. Yeah, back with Orsakun, just in the terms of representation within the cast, I like that her character is kind of, this is just sort of based on her accent and name, that it's implied that she is perhaps from Africa, as opposed to African-American or African-British descent or something like that. And also her hair is amazing. And I know that...
Her hair is awesome. Amazing. I love her
hair. You know, something that it's quite a big deal for a lot of, I think, especially African-American people who are sort of forced to conform to more like Caucasian hairstyles to be successful in like business and stuff these days. To have representation of someone having hair like that, you know, dreadlocks, and just like allowing hair to grow as it, you know, like African hair to grow as it naturally does.
So you're saying that she might not necessarily be African American descent. The actress Oyin Oladejo, she was actually from, not was, she is, she's not dead. She is from Nigeria herself, born in Nigeria and raised in Lagos.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm trying to remember, and look, listeners, it's been a few months since I've watched season two, not going to lie. I can't remember if she does have a full American accent or whether she's got a slight accent otherwise.
Oh, she does not have an American accent.
That's what I was trying to remember. I can't honestly remember.
No. She does not have an American accent at all.
Which is good, because I am sick of American accents in shows.
Well, it is an American show, so I'm sorry.
That's why I am liking Star Trek Picard, because you've got an Australian accent, you've got British accents in there. You've got a few different accents.
You've got whatever accent Santiago Cabrera is doing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going on a tangent here again. But it's like, how much would kind of accents and the way people speak actually evolve over the next sort of 200-300 years?
Well, I mean, the Australian accent evolved in that amount of time.
Yeah.
And New Zealand.
Yeah.
So what do you think of Ian's portrayal of Joanne in what we see?
I love it. I don't think she could have done anything better.
I suppose it's not too fair to ask, maybe just because of the amount we don't actually see. Often.
Yeah. But there are... We get to know her better when we have that episode on New Eden, because she's not 100% Starfleet all the time, because they're playing roles. They are acting like travelers from a different region of the planet. So you get to see a little more of her and how she probably was when she was growing up. But one thing I love, she's always on it. She's just always on it. And especially in the very first episode of season two, when they are heading for where the first signal appeared, and they've all gone down in those pods to get onto the Hiawatha.
Oh, yeah.
And that was such a great moment for both Woshikun and Detmer. Like that moment when she's telling Pike, "No, we got you. We have him, right, ladies?" And they're looking at each other like, yes, of course. But yeah, Woshikun was freaking amazing, because that was pretty much all on her.
Calm under pressure.
I loved that bit as well. And because it shows them just being real people.
Yes. And that's what we love. We love to see our Starfleet officers as real people, don't we? Yeah.
Now, the character of Wushikun as well was one of the few characters that we did see a mirror version of.
Yes, we did.
Although I don't think her mirror version got to do very much.
I think she was killed, wasn't she, or not?
Yeah.
No, she wasn't. Didn't she run away? I can't remember.
No, she was killed by Lorca. Yeah.
Which is weird, because I went and read the Mirror Universe comics. And she's still alive in those and becomes the Terran Emperor for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, go Washington. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Weird sequence towards the end of those comics.
Well, you know, never count out Arium, the one person who can generate her own helmet anytime she wants and not die of the poisonous gas she just released. Spoilers. Awoshikun Mirror was actually killed by Lorca on the Charon. Yes. So.
Yeah. She's also a commander on that level, though, instead of a junior grade lieutenant. Have you got anything else you want to say about Joanna Wushikun?
I think she's amazing.
Yeah. Let's hope we get some more of her in season 3.
It's going to be interesting, I think, because they're all going to have to find their way in this new world, and Starfleet rules may still apply, but there are going to be times where that's not going to serve them. So it'll be interesting.
And maybe having already come from, you know, growing up in one world and moving into a very different one by joining Starfleet, maybe she already has a little bit more experience in what that's going to feel like.
And same thing with Saru.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he left everything he ever knew and ended up in Starfleet. So he knows what it's like to leave everything behind and think he's never going to see it again and make a new start. But we're not talking about Saru because he's not background. Just saying there are parallels.
Moving on. Next on our list is Kayla Detmer.
Yeah.
Sort of quasi 7 of 9 ocular and cranial implant character.
Maybe.
It's above her left eye.
True.
Well, why is it always the left eye?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to be, doesn't it?
Because that's the sinister eye?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. Is it over her left eye or is it over her right eye?
I think, yeah.
Now I have to look at
the
picture.
Yeah, because the shave on her head is the opposite side to mine, so I think it is the left.
Right.
Yes, it's her left eye.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about Detmer.
So Detmer is obviously one of the few characters we've actually had since episode 1. She was on board the Shenzhou as the pilot when she was junior grade lieutenant, I think it was, and then obviously moved over to the Discovery under Lorca and made a full lieutenant, and she was obviously in charge of dealing with the Spore Drive as well.
Driving it from the pilot end.
Now, she's probably a little bit more developed, maybe, than a Wushikun, although a Wushikun does have a little bit more backstory. We don't really get too much backstory for Detmer. I believe the book said that she's from Germany.
That makes sense.
Yes, I don't think there's been anything around that in the actual show.
Well, and that's the thing, because what I have heard was that even though they didn't necessarily name all of these people in season 1, the writers had written up like little backstories for all of them.
That makes sense.
Just to give them a little more information on their characters. So kind of like, I don't know, fan fiction, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I feel like that's how, you know, these characters are written up for the books. You know, you'd have this stuff. So even though, you know, the books aren't like part of canon, they don't want to like just make things up whole cloth and then have it later on be, contradicted, even though that still happens a bit. So they would have a character Bible and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, the character was apparently created by David Mack for the first novel. And then they named Detmer on the show after that character.
I see. Okay. Interesting.
At least according to some website I found in my very minimal research that I did for this episode. i.e. like 3 seconds ago.
Sources, some website.
Yeah, sources, some website. I like it, yeah.
Citation needed.
Yes, exactly that.
I'd like to see maybe a little bit more how she got her implants and how she's been dealing with that. We saw that Arium was helping her through having
that
her implants.
Was really nice, that part, you know, when she talked about that. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that it – I don't know, I kind of like that we never see what the actual event was, but it's very easy for us to intuit that it was, you know, obviously she was injured in some way during the war, probably Battle of the Binaries, yeah. Because then seeing her, you know, in that first episode where she doesn't have any of that stuff, and then it's it is that very emotional moment when Burnham is coming aboard the Discovery and then sees Detmer there. And not only, like, sees her, and there's that kind of look of horror on Detmer's face as well, of, like, what are you doing here, you traitor? Yeah. And you also, like, see this, like, the side of the bionic eye and the sort of implants and stuff. And it obviously feeds into Michael's guilt over what she did quite a lot.
I mean, that was a very, very well-played scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I could feel the anger from Detmer.
Mm.
Yeah, she communicated a lot without saying a word.
And then that's just a mark of a good actress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And she plays her. Her name escapes me.
Emily Coates, of course.
Yeah, she's just done a very good job, even though few of these characters have had those many kind of lines and stuff. They're all very good. And I think Emily Coates especially at face acting and through their expressions and mannerisms showing who the characters are.
Well, most of these actors that have played, you know, Awashikun, Reese, etc., is probably one of their first acting roles or main franchise big roles.
Yes.
I don't think I haven't seen any of these characters in anything else other than what they've been in, but also can't find anything when looking them up.
Hmm.
And it's the same in Picard, obviously, Issa Briones and... I was going to call him Eva Longoria, Evan Evagora. That's all their first big roles as well.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Oh, Issa Briones was in Hamilton, wasn't she?
She was in Hamilton.
Really?
Yeah. And that girl has been acting since 2008.
Oh,
so anyone who says that she's green doesn't know what the H they're talking
about.
All
right,
about.
Well, I better go away then, and I. So- Sorry.
I saw that in something else. No, you don't dare.
Apparently not.
You don't.
No.
She's been acting for 13 years.
Yeah, but okay. I haven't seen Hamilton. So.
11. No, let's
obviously.
See. 9 years. Let's see. What's 2008? 12 years. I know how to do math. Oh, my word. Someone just cut me off, please.
Okay.
Sorry.
End show.
Yes, 12 years.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll take back the Issa Briones comment then.
Yeah, and
I'm not saying that
Emily Coates has been in a lot of movies.
But I'm not going to say that these actors... Where did you find that? I couldn't find anything. Oh, because I don't like IMDb.
Well, I'm not looking at IMDb. I'm looking at Memory Alpha, buddy.
Well, I don't look at Memory Alpha for actress or actor stuff. Let's have a look.
Well, you can click on their name and it'll give you stuff.
Yeah.
She first appeared in 2011 in The Bright Side of the Moon. Among her movies are Crimson Peak and the shorts Bullet-Headed, Satisfaction, As I Like Her, Cherry, Can't Close a Painted Eye, Three Way, Not Calling, and Come Back. She also produced one movie she appeared in, Barn Wedding, in 2015.
Ooh.
On television, she appeared in episodes of L.A. Complex, Transporter the Series, The Next Step, The Girlfriend Experience, Dark Matter.
She was in Dark Matter?
That.
What was she doing in Dark Matter?
Yes, I remember that. I have to go back and rewatch that. And Murdoch Mysteries. She also had a role in the 2014 TV movie Best Christmas Party Ever. In 2019, she starred in the drama Goliath. So,
what did she do in Dark Matter? That was a show that should not have been cancelled, just FYI.
Agree. I want to know what happened. I was so upset when I found out it had been cancelled.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'll just delete my whole entire conversation about this.
Liam has editing powers.
I'm sorry.
I do.
Yeah. You can edit it to your satisfaction.
Quite frankly, I'll probably leave it in.
Do not mind. Make yourself sound better. It's fine.
No.
It's all good.
Also, anyway, moving on from clearly what I don't know what I'm talking about to something I do know what I'm talking about, in that has got to be, she must have some really irresponsible parents to get her a pilot's license at age 12.
Yes.
Seriously.
I don't know why you would say that.
But 12?
I don't think that's irresponsible.
Surely there's like a pilot license age.
Yeah,
so
but
here you go, have a warp drive at 12.
She was a prodigy.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if you're a prodigy. You can drive a racing car. Don't actually ignore that one. I know what I'm talking about with racing cars. But you can't drive a normal car on the road at 12.
Yeah, but this is not our time, is it? This is a 200-odd years into the future. And I will see my dream come alive last. And I will touch the sky.
With my pilot license at age 12.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Exactly. Girls, it is scientifically proven that girls at 12 years of age are more mature than boys at 12 years of age.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
Just take that into consideration.
12-year-old girls are probably more mature than I am at 30.
So you're saying you have the maturity of a 12-year-old girl. Good to know.
Yep, pretty much.
Love it.
Where were we going with this? No, sorry.
We're talking about Emily Coates and Detmer and her pilot license.
Detmer getting her pilot's license
that she got
12.
At age 12.
I like that. That kind of put me somewhat in mind of like kids growing up in the country, and they just sort of drive a, you know, an old car, just paddock bashing around from, I don't know how young. Like, I have a few friends who grew up out there, and they just sort of drive their dad's old car around paddocks when they're like, I don't know, mm-hmm. 8 or 9.
I just want to point out something in a minute. Coming back. So you finish your sentence, Brandon, and I'm going to wag my finger at why you shouldn't have a driver's license at age 12 in 22 something or other.
That's not a driver's license. It's a pilot's license, but okay.
Same thing. You're driving something.
I'm just saying that my mom grew up in rural Arkansas, and she was driving cars around at age 12. And in fact, the age for driver's licenses at that time, which was in the the mid 50s, was 14.
Wow.
But didn't they have like less rules back then?
Yeah, they also didn't have seatbelts.
Yeah, dangerous.
So safety wasn't really an issue.
Neither to starships.
Until the La Serena.
Except La Serena. And I even, when that happened on the card, I turned to Dave and I said, Belinda is going to love this.
Shout out to Belinda.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so much joy.
Now, back to my point I was going to make. Mm-hmm.
Wag your finger.
Fingers are wagging, listeners. Fingers are wagging.
He's literally doing both fingers. A finger wag.
We see, like, Jerky Kid Kirk driving a car off of a cliff in Star Trek 09 as a kid. You can't trust
him. Yeah, but Kirk is an idiot.
Yeah, well, we all know Kirk is an idiot. But
Detmer is not.
So are 12-year-olds.
Yeah, but it's a subjective thing. Some people can handle it. Some people should never be allowed to get behind the wheel of a spaceship.
Yeah. But neither should 12-year-olds. Anyway.
I'm just saying there are exceptions to every.
I'm going to headcanon this and say that she got a like racing pilot's license at 12. And that's how I'm going to fix it with my headcanon.
Sure.
Because I'm sorry, irresponsible.
Yes. Well, whatever works. I could definitely see this being the future equivalent of, you know, kids learning to drive a car on a rural property. At like age 12, maybe her parents had their own small transport ship, and she was just, you know, sitting up there learning how to fly from really young. Maybe saying, you know, I had my pilot's license from the age 12 was a little bit of, like, hyperbole, but I don't know. It would actually be kind of fun if we got an explanation of this. I don't know if we will, though.
Probably not, no.
It'd be fun if someone brought it up. Just be like, hey, Kayla, now you say you had your license to fly Starship since you were 12. You want to go into that at all?
Nah, made it up. We also see Detmer talking at the end of Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1, I think it was, to what I'm assuming was her best friend.
Yes.
I mean, people also figured it could also be a romantic relationship. Don't know.
It is possible, according to what I've heard of the character Bible stuff, she is bisexual.
Well, so I know she was macking on a dude on the party episode.
In Magic to Make the Sanest Man go bad. You know what I mean. Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
Yeah, party episode.
That one. Yeah, the Groundhog Day episode.
Disco Fever. Let's see, is there anything else to say about Detmer?
She's a really another one of those people that's really good under pressure, and she does things that,
oh yeah,
you know, probably your average pilot wouldn't be able to do, like a donut.
Yeah, that was fun.
Doing a donut thing in space. Yep.
Yeah,
that's just gonna shoot this asteroid out of its butt.
That says me even. Gives me even more parallels with, like, you know, growing up in a rural area, because it just makes me think of the BNS balls that happen in Outback Australia, which, for people who don't understand, is bachelors and spinsters balls, where a big part of it is people going out there in their utes and seeing who can do the best donuts in the car park.
Nice.
Is this a Victorian thing?
I think it's probably more common in, like, Queensland, the furthest north part of South Australia, maybe.
I know we get people from the city go out to, like, the country regions to go to try and snag a farmer as a husband.
Do you know what the word spinster originally meant?
Well, isn't it from, like, a really old...
It's from...
Like, poem or something?
Is it from Regency period?
Yeah, but do you know what the actual definition of the word was?
I thought it was someone who's married.
It was a woman who is unmarried above the age, presumably above the age of like 20 or something ridiculous like that.
Well, no, that's not all there was to it. It was an unmarried woman who was independent.
Ah. Oh.
She made her own money.
I see.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. So, but you know.
Well,
people's men being in control of everything, of course, didn't like independent women, and so they made that a derogatory comment.
Yes, of course.
Now, my last thing I want to say about Detmer is to do with one of my favorite Voyager references in Discovery and probably all of most recent Trek, and that's because she played Carter Scott. She plays Carter Scott. Yeah, so it's the little thing we always saw Seven and Naomi Wilde play. She turns out that she plays it with Arium and Tilly, and that Arium is, I think, too good at it.
That's good.
Augmented.
Yeah, and Kayla refuses to play Carter Scott with Tilly or Arium because
they're too good. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, let's move on to someone else who's a delightful background character that we don't really see much of. As we're going to go further and further, we're going to have less and less to talk about. And we're going to move on to Lieutenant Jen Reese, who is our Chief Tactical Officer.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't
know. And this awkward silence says that we don't know what to say about him because we don't know much about him.
I know he has sparred many times with Arium and can hold his own.
Oh, that's true. I mean, the actor himself, Patrick Kwok-Chun, is a martial artist.
He's got a lot of martial arts.
You see some of the pictures and he's like got so many bruises all over him from his fighting. But yeah, so it stands to reason that he'll end up putting that through into his character because, you know, Chief Tactical Officer would probably be quite good at martial arts instead of other particular Chief Tactical Officers that get eaten by or killed by tardigrades and one on the Enterprise D that always seems to get punched over or knocked over.
Well, to be fair, Landry got herself killed. Yeah. Landry was careless.
Antagonizing.
Yeah, she was gung-ho and just really not, that was not a good thing.
But Reese pretty much is just sits there in the background and sort of turns up to pilot shuttles and do some things that people need him to do. But in terms of how much actual impact he makes on an episode, there's not much more than him shouting something from the background.
I mean, he does a couple of, like, cool, especially good moments of being kind of cool under pressure when they've been in, you know, space battle situations. And maybe he is just sort of sitting there kind of pushing the buttons, but he doesn't, you know, the actor seems to play him as, like, quite calm in these situations. Like, even when they're fighting to try and save the USS Gagarin, when I think I was in Sivas Pacem Parabellum, you know, he's kind of just there and he's ready. You know, he fights the torpedoes and does all that sort of stuff when he needs to. He doesn't seem to kind of freak out or anything like that. So, you know, I guess he's a good Starfleet officer, calm under pressure.
Has a crush on Tilly.
Does he?
Yeah, he was the one who tried to kiss her at the party in Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. And she just kind of ducked out of it because she was in a musician phase.
Yeah. That's all right. I'll be in a Reese phase. It's okay.
Yeah. So, but we never see him trying anything again. I guess he got the message.
Oh, that's good.
Poor dude. Knocked down. Struck out.
Aww.
So, again, hopefully we get to see a little bit more of him in season 3.
Yes.
Yeah, I do know he was very, what's the word I'm looking for here? I hate it when I do this now because I know what the word is and I can't find it. Anyway, when Arium was basically begging Michael to kill her and blow her out the airlock and the entire bridge crew was listening, he came up next to Detmer, comforting. That's the word I was looking for. He was very comforting towards her during that whole scene. And in fact, she ended up leaning against him as well, just taking comfort from him. He seems cuddly to me. I would hit that. Yeah, I went there. It was expected. Come on. It's fun. I don't get to do that very often. It's usually, you know, the guys saying that about the ladies, but, you know, I would play with that. Yeah.
There's a certain postcards host likes a bit of Jen Reese as well.
Can't imagine who that is. Oh, wait, there's only one postcards host.
And Mr. C.D. Littlefield.
We love you.
I mean, I just want some more Jen Reese. It would be good to see a little fight scene with him using his actual martial arts skills.
Yeah, that would be really fun to see him actually kind of see him throw hands a bit.
Well, and like I said, I really think that everybody that we're talking about today is going to come more to the forefront with season 3.
Yeah.
At least I hope that's going to be the case, but I think that...
Yeah, well, we'll see.
We're not going to see... I think we're going to have like three different groups that are split apart for a while because that's kind of what it looked like to me from the brief trailers that we've seen. So I guess we'll see.
I do like you said, Brandy, the, you know, just in that scene in Project Daedalus where he goes over and comforts Detmer. It's even though we don't really get the time to sort of spend a lot of time getting to know the more background characters, it's nice to see these humanizing moments between them, or where we can just sort of infer what's going on. And again, you know, like the little back and forth between Kayla and Awushikun, both of them sitting at the sort of ops and helm consoles at the front, just kind of talking and being friendly. It's nice to have these little moments where, like I said, where you see that they're real people.
Yeah, well, and I think the events of season 1 really bonded them all together. because, you know, especially after finding out Lorca was not their Lorca, that's gotta be demoralizing. But they all just pulled together and they got stuff done.
Yeah.
And we can see the evidence of that in season two. Even if it's only in little moments, we still get to see the evidence of that. And I like that.
Moving on to Mr. Random Communications Officer Man.
I knew you were going to do that.
You know me too well.
I knew you were going to do that.
Mr. Didn't have a full name until season two. Mr. Ronald Altman Bryce. Junior grade lieutenant officer for communications, whose only memorable role is telling us that there was a thing coming through at the end of season one and it turned out to be the Enterprise.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
That's about all I have to say about him at the moment.
That's unfortunate. I mean, hopefully, I think with him especially, you know, starting out as like really just being an extra in the background and now he is.
Well, he wasn't even on the bridge.
Yeah, but, you know, now he is considered much more properly part of the bridge crew. So, I think this is one character who is definitely going to benefit the most from...
Leaving the 23rd century
these,
behind.
Yeah, well, these people being sort of brought forward a bit more to, like, more into focus in season three.
Well, because, I mean, let's face it, we don't really know anything about him. Although I did quickly go back and look at the end of season one, you know, the scene where they all had their medals. And he was there as a, I wouldn't call him prominent. I mean, they all got medals, let's face it. But him, Reese, and Reese especially, like they're probably the more two background ones. I wish Shakun and Detmer a little bit more in the forefront physically just from where their seats are as well. But anyway, they also received medals and were standing with the rest of the bridge crew that we could see in that episode. So that was all right and quite nice to see that. But, yeah, I just need to know more information about them. I don't want a new character brought on board whilst at the detriment of potentially these two characters, because I do want to know more.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, the one thing that I can say is that in an Obal for Karen... when all of the bridge crew were speaking different languages, his was Welsh.
Nice.
It was actually, yeah, you're right. I thought that was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it is a very distinct language and one that is just mind-bending, frankly, because you look at the word and then you hear how it's pronounced and you're like, how do you get that from this?
Would you believe that the actor, Ronnie Rowe Jr., was also in Dark Matter at some point?
Yeah, I would believe it. I really am going to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah.
If I can, if it's even still on streaming anymore. It was a good show.
I've never watched it. I need to add it to the list.
I mean, it was a bit corny, but also good.
Yeah, but I've seen worse.
Yes, I mean, it was. Look, he was. He was with Four. The Asian guy was Four, wasn't he? Sorry to hijack the conversation with...
No, that's okay. I ended up seeing Two on The Rookie on ABC, but I had to stop watching that because one of the actresses had to leave the show because of racist treatment and sexual harassment, I refuse to watch any show that allows that to happen, so... I'm sorry, Nathan Fillion, I love you, but dude, come on.
He was also in The Expanse. I am so not good at picking up actors.
Yeah.
I might have to watch The Expanse again. Oh no, that's going to be so hard. Oh no, I don't want to do that at all because I just hated that show. Oh no.
I'm just going to hijack this particular episode with just something else I want to say. I've said in the past that I've had trouble with Michael Burnham being the center of everything that happens. I'm now going to retract that comment because I'm also annoyed a little bit how James Holden is the center of everything that happens in The Expanse. So I'm now going to retract my comment.
That's just kind of being the problem with trying to have someone as your protagonist.
Yeah.
And then you have all these great big world-changing things happening. It's like, oh, we've got to find a way for this person to be important in all of it.
You got anything more to say about this guy?
About Bryce?
I'm looking forward to learning more about him in season 3.
Again, you know, because he's just kind of been there in the background, there unfortunately isn't much to say about him. I'm trying to see if there is even... I don't think we even got any more sort of context for him in... what's the episode name where we find out everything about Arium?
That's
Project Daedalus. Because that was a good episode for showing a little bit about all of these other background characters that she was interacting with. You know, learning that Kayla and Tilly also play Catiscot with her. And I don't think even in that episode we got any stuff for Bryce, unfortunately.
No, we did for Reese, but not Bryce. So,
yeah, he's still a mystery.
Solve that mystery in season 3, Discovery. Yes, please.
Nick, please introduce this random dude with a big square face.
Oh, so we want to go with the alien?
No. Milton Richter.
Oh, jaw, yeah.
The guy with more jaw than square all jaw. Of us put together.
Cool. All right. So, yeah, there was, I guess before Bryce took over, there was this other guy for like the first couple of episodes. I'm pretty sure he was at the communications officer station. The character's name is apparently Milton Richter. My partner specifically was always referring to him as hot background guy. Because, as Liam just said, he has more jaw than all the rest of us put together.
I need to see a picture of this guy.
I'm fairly sure me and Jordan have said that as well in the past.
He's just, he almost has the, especially in the picture of him on Memory Alpha, where he's looking a little bit confused about something.
Mm-hmm.
It is the look of the, like, dumb but lovable, like, football jock character from, like, an old American high school movie.
If you click on his actual actor name in Memory Alpha, you get a new picture and...
Christopher Russell.
Yep, I will be back in, like, 10 minutes.
I've got to see this. Shut up. Don't. No, he's
definitely got that smolder going on.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Let's see what else he's... Let's see what else he's been in.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm pretty sure he's been in some Hallmark movies, y'all. I am pretty sure he has been Hallmark hot.
Always been in Air Crash Investigations.
What?
Please tell me he was playing a pilot in like a what's the word? You know, like when they do like reconstructions of the things that happened.
He was first lieutenant, so he was probably in the cockpit. Maybe, I don't know. I will admit, I do love Air Crash Investigations. It is sadly one of my favorite shows.
Wow.
I don't know why. It's just, anyway, were we only bringing him up so you can say that he was like hot background character guy?
Pretty much, because he just
there's
the
nothing else that he's done.
I it was quite interesting that at the time, I think when it was first starting, he was on there. He was almost like the like, I guess aside from Lorca as the captain, but sort of among the sort of background crew, he was kind of like the single token white guy, which was just kind of interesting. And I actually quite liked that the kind of casting was like that at the start.
Okay, I have confirmed. I have definitely seen him in Hallmark movies. he was also in Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan series on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
There we go.
He looks like someone who would be a character in a Tom Clancy story.
Yeah, his character's name was Burke. But yeah, once I saw him, I'm like, I know this face. I've seen this guy before.
He's been in something called Christmas Unleashed.
Oh, dear, yeah. That sounds...
When Becca's dog runs away on Christmas Eve, she must team up with her ex-boyfriend to find him, as our pup leads the exes on an all-day, all-night search. Through their North Carolina hometown, they revisit people, places, and things that remind them of Christmas pasts that they spent together. And by Christmas morning, they found the dog and have rediscovered their love for each other.
He is in a lot of dog-related Hallmark movies. I mean, if you go through his IMDb list, there are so many dog movies in there. So many.
Okay, I'm feeling a little bit bad that we might be paying him out. And we're not... I'm sure he's a wonderful actor.
Oh, I have no problem with him at all. I think that he's very good at being a hot background guy. And he's good enough that I didn't realize he was in Jack Ryan until I saw it in his IMDb credits and went, oh, yeah. So, you know, he made me believe that he was that character. So, yeah. Basically, if you can make me forget the other things that you've been in or where I've seen you before, you are doing your job.
Okay.
As an actor.
So moving on from one background character that appeared in basically not much at all to someone that appears quite a bit that we don't actually know too much about, but is sort of an interesting background character. It doesn't have a name, and I think there's like a couple of different ones that we've seen, but they're a species called the Osnullus.
I get the feeling that this was like the kind of makeup and costuming department just sort of really having some fun and just like, what's the weirdest looking thing that we can make? That we can just put on an actor and have them stand in the background. I think officially they said there were two Osnullus crew members that have turned up. One was on the bridge, and the other was a science officer at some point. Maybe in the Spore Drive lab? I can't remember. But yeah, this is the one with just this sort of big, bulbous head.
Many holes.
Yes, depending on how you look at it. The front can look like a bit of human anatomy. But
let's be fair, it does look a bit like a vagina.
Yes.
I mean, if that's what they look like, I'm glad I'm not into them.
Well, I'm sure you could find a picture of one, but the funny thing about vaginas is that they're all different.
Well,
they're all different.
They are.
Actually, what it reminds me of a little bit is like the underside of a facehugger from Alien.
Actually,
which
yeah.
Which is also also a bit sexual.
I mean, and yeah, that's anything from Alien is going to be anything designed by H.R. Giger.
Is sexual, yeah.
A good thing I find about the Osnullus species is whilst they've got a humanoid figure, I mean, it's clearly played by a human underneath there who's also female, which I actually did not know until I looked up the actor before I started recording this podcast. But they've got a very non-humanoid face, and that's almost to the getting there with the whole I really don't want humanoid species in Star Trek. Like, I'm sick of seeing them. I want Tholians. I want 8472 style things.
Yeah.
And I feel like Osnullus is getting there with the face, at least.
Yeah.
Because you can't tell where its nose is, and it apparently doesn't have a mouth, which, I mean, how's it going to feed? Through its eyes or something? I've got no idea.
Maybe it's those little protrusions around, you know, underneath its eyes, sort of like where the cheeks would be.
Oh, yeah.
Probisci. Is that the correct?
How do you reckon the actress sees out of this?
I reckon she doesn't.
But we've seen them walking, haven't we?
Oh, sure.
just walks into things.
She can see.
I mean,
they just set her on a course and they say, okay.
I know.
Now keep going forward, stop, turn.
I feel
forward.
Like Doug Jones, especially. Would be able to speak about that. And there are probably interviews with him where he's talked about it. I mean, quite often, you know, actors who are wearing sort of full makeup like that can't see, and they're just relying completely on the direction that they hear, which they also probably often can't hear all that well with all that makeup over their ears. Yeah. So it is an incredibly
challenging.
Yeah, an incredibly challenging art form to act in stuff like that. have immense respect for people who are able to do it.
Well, not just that. I wouldn't be able to even get through the body cast part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would die of claustrophobia, hyperventilation.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what they go through to make those casts so that they could make the prosthetics. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I'm telling you right now.
It would be terrifying.
So, yeah, I applaud everyone who can make it through that particular thing. Because it's horrifying to me.
Did we see if whether one of the Osnalises is staying on the ship to the 32nd century?
I believe that there was one in the sick bay with Dr. Pollard.
Whilst they were travelling, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It should be noted that the actual species name Osnalis is not actually referenced on screen, so one could say that it's not canon yet, but it's been said by the actress herself and even Ollerton de Osunsami actually as the name. So,
yeah, I believe it's what Glenn Hetrick, who is in charge of the prosthetics and FX makeup department, mm-hmm. actually came up with the name and presumably has it all labeled as that in there.
So, Nick, after having a chat about some of these background characters on Discovery, what are your sort of final thoughts about them?
I like that we're getting the beginnings of an ensemble with everyone. And I know that they were trying to say that that's what they were going for the whole time.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, like the focus has, and it always will still be on the mains, on Michael, Saru, Tilly. But I think that especially characters like Detmar, Orsiken, and get it right, Bryce and Reese will, I think they're going to be pushed to the foreground a bit more in season 3. I feel like with them being thrown into the future, I don't know how many new characters they will meet there, but I think much like with Voyager having a smaller crew, like canonically the ship itself had a smaller crew than like the Enterprise. And in this case, again, not everyone on the Discovery's crew has stayed on board as they've gone into the future. I think quite a few people left.
Yeah, because we just don't know how many people did leave, did we?
Yeah, so it is probably going to be a smaller cast, you know, a smaller crew on board the ship, therefore fewer people to be in the cast to kind of be part of the show. So the ones who are there get more screen time, get to be more front and center more of the time.
Okay. Randy?
Yeah, well, we get an idea of how many people are on Discovery when they are evacuating to the Enterprise so that they can blow Discovery up in an attempt to destroy the sphere data. And most of those people don't go back to the ship. So they do have a very small skeleton crew at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're going to be focusing a lot on those lower decks people because we have these people on the bridge that we don't know enough about.
Yeah.
And I think this will be their time to shine because this is now not Starfleet mission oriented. This is now, where are we? Because Michael obviously does not end up where she was going.
Mm.
So where are we? How do we find each other? What do we do now? And how do we fix what's going on or what's happened to the Federation, etc.? And so I think we're going to see those other characters coming forward and we're going to learn more about them. And I'm all for that. Please give me more Reese and Bryce.
Yeah.
Or Reese and Rice, because now that's what they are in my head. In any case, I'm looking forward to what season 3 may offer us in character development for these background characters.
Yeah, I just want to see some more character development on some of the people we don't know about because, I mean, at the end of the day, we've seen people on screens for 15, 16 episodes and we know next to nothing about some of them. So it would be nice to have a little bit more development. Okay, what do I use for this? It's been fun talking about some Brice on Rice action today. I right now. I better do a proper one.
That's going in the bloopers. sorry. You almost got through it and I died.
So here is a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I like the character, but I would have rather seen Noonien.
Okay, interesting.
Tiebreaker to Clerk Zalagi. That's your new nickname, is Tiebreaker.
Yeah, Chrissy, what do you think? Since Brandon and I think exactly the opposite.
Yeah, that's all right. That's why you got to have three people. It works better.
Earl Grey. No, I think the hat's going to get bigger, but also double as her spacecraft. It'll unfold, it'll envelop her, and she'll be able to just walk out an airlock and zoom off.
Oh, it's wow. Her personal transporter.
Oh, there it comes. Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I like Amy.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
For a logic extremist suicide bomber to be shown on screen in Star Trek, blowing up a ship with a high-profile ambassador on it in Sarek, it is doing exactly what Star Trek usually does in terms of bringing something from the real world straight back into the show. And I thought that that was one of the most stark examples of that in Season 1 with Vlatak.
Yeah.
The Ready Room.
This story, Una's book, which is excellent, and the upcoming third season of Discovery, from what we've seen so far, are all at their core commentaries on our present day. They're commentaries on Brexit, they're commentaries on the Trump administration, they're commentaries on the sort of the way that countries and governments around the world are turning their back on globalization and they're becoming insular. And, you know, science fiction has always been about social commentary, and Star Trek has been about social commentary. And so what we're seeing is modern day commentary on the current climate of the world. And that's the reason that these stories are taking the form that they're taking, as far as I see it.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop. I keep wanting to say desk pop because my brain is putting desktop and podcasts together. It's just, okay, I'm going to start over. Or the Desktop Podcasts app to get the latest episodes the minute they drop. And please leave us a star rating and written review. Please remember, constructive criticism is welcome. Trolling is not. It helps us jump up the charts and find more listeners.
And if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, in case you haven't heard of that in the last however many podcasts everyone has been saying it, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. You can choose to send to a show and select the edge that will come right to us, or really it will come to me, and then I will forward it to other people. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Liam, when you aren't wondering if the head of the network will allow us to use the title we want to use, where can people find you?
That's going to just open it up. So if they're not allowed to use it, we'll go straight on the Babel Conference anyway. Nice work. You can find me on the Babel Conference. You can find me at Twitter at LS74656. And you can find me also on the network on To The Journey, our Star Trek Discovery podcast. So, Nick, when you're not fantasizing about aliens that have things that look like human anatomy, where can people find you when you're on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter
at punkzoologist on Instagram at punkrockzoologist, and I'm very often in the Babel conference, either lurking or commenting on postcard threads. So, Brandy, when you're not watching a man with more chin than God trying to find his dog in a Hallmark movie, where can people find you?
Strangely, I haven't actually seen that particular movie. He's been a lot of dog movies.
I kind of want to watch it now.
So, hey, you've got the Hallmark channel. You can find it somewhere. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. You can find me on the places. My brain. Try to make this sound coherent later, Liam. You can also find me on Live from the Edge with Bruce Gibson when it does actually start up again, which will happen with new episodes of Star Trek Discovery. And in fact, I'm going to be on an episode of Literary Treks that is going to be coming out soon, if it hasn't already at the time that this drops. And also, I do a podcast with my wonderful husband, Dave, called The Dark Corner Podcast, where we just talk about whatever nerdy thing we want from a darker perspective. And there are swears in that. And I have my own solo podcast called Headcanon, where I just basically talk about all my weird thoughts about everything, but especially all my fandoms. And you can find both the Tark... Both the Tark? Wow. Tarks? You can find things. You can find both the Dark Corner Podcast and Headcanon at darkcornerpodcast.com.
Yes.
And that's pretty much all for now.
We would love to give a shout out to our wonderful, not so background associate producers, those being Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrew, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett, and Chris Tribuzio. Thank you all for supporting The Edge and Trek FM via Patreon. And if you'd like to become an associate producer of The Edge or any of our shows on Trek FM and have access to our Patrons Roundtable, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge of Federation Space.
Fantastic. Then I will queue up my episode of Discovery that is a commentary about and watch it.
No, you'd be hard pressed to find it on Discovery.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Voyager.
Just leave me the fuck alone, okay? You know I have fever brain.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.